Welcome to Conversations with Doc Martin. This video series focuses on extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. Please don't forget to hit the subscribe button and click the notifications so you don't miss out on our next guest. Today, we're joined by Colleen Manji, CEO of Spear Education, which is the nation's leading in-person and online educator for dentists, their teams, and their patients. Colleen currently serves on the Pacific Region Board of the Young Presidents Organization, and he also currently sits on the Open Wide Foundation Board. Colleen holds his master's in business administration from Duke University and was awarded one of Phoenix Business Journal's top 40 under 40. So Colleen, welcome to you. I'm so happy that you're joining us today.
Well, thanks, Martin. Appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. So for our viewers out there, a little bit of disclaimer, Colleen is my CEO and he's the man that actually hired me. Can you believe it? 10 years ago this year. And so I was super excited to have Colleen on our show for a whole host of reasons, because he's been at the helm through the 2008 downturn and the current COVID crisis that we're seeing the light of the end of the tunnel. And so that's why I wanted to have Colleen join us today. So Colleen, you know, there's lots of different types of people on here. So would you mind just describing for our viewers what Spear Education does? I shared it was for dentists, but what do we really do?
Yeah, I appreciate you. I mean, you did the good Cliff Notes version. So I'll you know a lot about the business, of course. Yeah. You've been involved for, as you mentioned, 10 years. We both look exactly the same still.
Totally, 100%.
For 10 years later. So at the core, we are educating dentists and their team members to provide better clinical outcomes to their patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that comes in many ways, shapes, or forms. And just like any profession is, you know, in the dental business, there's a technical proficiency that we help doctors with. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, we've started doing, which I'm pretty proud of and you're involved with as well, is how they then apply that, not only that technical proficiency, but how they're actually running their businesses as well. Yeah. And so where our roots come from is improving clinical outcomes. And now what we're also overlaying into that is, you know, how do they actually also run a successful business? I think what a lot of people don't know about the dental business, which is really fascinating, is there's about 150,000 practices in the U.S. Just over 100,000 of those are independently owned and operated. Mm-hmm. And so it's not some big corporate business where you've got, you know, a CEO and a CFO and all this infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's predominantly a small business. And so it's actually a $150 billion end market of healthcare, but it's very fragmented. Mm-hmm. And it's really unique in that the person that's actually treating the patient is also the owner. And what's, I think it's most unique about that, unlike many businesses, is that, you know, for Spear, our business, you know, I spend all my time focusing on running the business,
yep.
But I'm not the product. I'm not the educator. I'm not the person delivering the content. In a dental practice, it's very different. Is, you know, they show up in the morning and they're working on patients. They're the product. They're the person that the patient's paying to go see, and they have to run their business in the evening. And so where we fit into that is we help make that a better, easier journey for them in how they run their business. And we help make their clinical outcomes more predictable and better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that people tend to miss. I love what you said there about the dentist being the clinician and then they have to run their business at night. And so dentistry is so analogous to any small business. And, you know, if you're a baker and you're the primary producer or the primary baker, I guess you'd say, then when are you going to run your business? And dentistry is very, very similar to that because they don't necessarily teach you business in pastry school, just like they don't teach a lot of business in dental school. And so, you know, as we said, I've been with the company now 10 years. And when I started, you know, we could fit around what, like four or five round tables. And now we basically fill up a good majority of our auditorium that we have on our campus. And so can you share a little bit about kind of your own journey within the CEO shoes and kind of what you've learned over the years as we've grown from a smaller business into a much more substantial entity?
Yeah. You know, this title CEO is such a weird title because I could, if I wanted to, I could go start a business tomorrow with four employees and call myself the CEO. And then there's, you know, Elon Musk is the CEO of Tesla and there's Tim Cook is the CEO of Apple. And we all have the same job title, but we actually have all very, very different jobs. And so, you know, I feel like I've had a different job every single year and sometimes every 6 months. And so, you know, my journey began really as a part of, you know, Spear was a family business. And so as I came in to run it at the time as president, you know, my father and Dr. Spear really founded the business.
Sure.
And so I was very, very lucky in two ways. You know, first was because it was so small, I got to do everything. So, you know, stood up sales, marketing, you know, kind of all the different functions, but then also got good mentorship from folks that have been in business for a while. And because we grew so quickly, you know, my journey, and frankly, I was doing everything I could to not end up in the dental business. My father was involved in dentistry his entire career. I grew up in it, literally out of the womb. He was involved in dentistry from software to consulting to money management. It's always dental, dental, dental. And so I was really lucky because I got to observe an incredibly hard worker, an incredibly sharp business person. You know, my dad was so good at being able to balance family and his profession. And he was, you know, there at every single hockey game, but also there for every single business event. He was there for my mom. So it was a really, really great example I grew up around. So, you know, I wanted to be exactly like my dad in terms of how he ran his business. I just wanted to be nowhere near his business. But graduating May 2008 with a master's in business with a concentration in finance, for those of you who remember that, you know, first Great Recession, there wasn't a lot of good jobs for folks in finance. And so, you know, my dad, I'll never forget, said, hey, if you're going to be broke, you may as well be broke with equity. So come join me as, you know, one of the first people at Spear. So that was really what started the journey, and that kind of duality of being able to observe a very successful business person, but at the same time was lucky enough where my dad said, you got to deal with it. You got to hire, you got, you know, I've done this before. I don't want to do it again. I'm not signing up for a startup. I'm going to be a forward-facing person. I want to be an educator. I want to be a relationships person. I want to build channel partnerships. So he was forward-facing and I had to build the operation.
Absolutely.
And so I feel like, you know, you know, that journey has really consisted of a 10-person company and then a 20-person company and then a 30-person company and then a 50-person company, you know, and then we brought in on investors and a great private equity firm in Linden and had to go learn how to be that type of CEO. And so it's like a different job 15 years in a row. And I'd say that everything's changed, like 100% of what I learned has changed except for one thing. We've got it right sometimes. We haven't got it right other times. I think we've got it right today, which is a really strong culture.
Yes.
And so if this one analog that, you know, that I can say, you know, you don't need to know how to be the CEO of a 1,000-person company or a 5-person company, it doesn't matter. That sort of strong company culture made its way from day one to today. And that's been a theme that's remained consistent. But the rest of the journey has been an evolution. I've had to really learn. Because it's very, very different when you don't know everybody's, you know, I used to know everybody's name. I used to know their family. Like it's impossible. There's too many people.
Yes.
So that's been really, really difficult. But it's an evolution. And I think every one of our team members, including you, have had to sort of ride through that evolution over time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, without question, it's a very different company today than it was 10 years ago, but in so many wonderful ways. And, you know, you have led us so well through this pandemic. And I've actually never told you this before, but I so appreciate how you led us, how you had our weekly town halls in the particularly in the beginning of the crisis, and how you were so transparent with everybody and really stepped up as the consummate leader. And I just want to publicly thank you for that, because
thanks, Martin. I appreciate that.
It's been a rough ride for everybody. And so one of the reasons why I really wanted to chit chat with you today is related to the leadership that you've displayed. And leadership, you know, everybody throws around the word leadership these days, and there's lots of books and courses and what have you. And what really struck me as I was thinking about, you know, asking you to join me is this. We have been and are going through this pandemic. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. You also helped to guide the company during the 2008 downturn when the company was just starting. And, you know, hindsight is certainly 20/20. And I'm very curious to ask you, what parallels did you see between 2008 and the COVID-19 pandemic? And how did that help you lead us in the extraordinary way that you have?
Yeah, so thank you very much. I appreciate those kind words. And, you know, this is a first podcast, I think, interview I've ever participated in for a reason, because you asked.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know, I'm the back of the room kind of guy, right? So yeah. I think where it makes sense for a CEO to be public facing, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
For us, it's about our faculty and about our customer success reps, and there's other folks that are the face of the business that I think are more deserving of me to be in front of the business. So I appreciate you asking to be on here. But I think I'll tell you the similarities, but they're so different. 2008 and the pandemic. 2008 in hindsight was so much easier because our customers, the dentist, felt pain, but they didn't get their entire business shut down.
Sure.
And so, you know, we as a, you know, our board, we talk all the time about, you know, how do we disaster plan and what happens if there's a recession, quote unquote. Well, a recession is just, you know, maybe it was $100 in revenue and it, you know, we do 110 the next year and there's a recession and it's $90, right? So that's a recession. And you say, okay, how do I navigate through that? Is there changes I need to make in the organization? Do I slow down hiring? You know, do we not pay out bonuses? I felt like that was, you know, a bit of a different, you know, different analog. Whereas today, our customers went to zero.
Yep.
So I think that's a very, you know, to me, a very clear distinction between the two. What I learned from 2008, I think it ended up, because that's when I started really being a sort of leader in business, which I find I'm really lucky that that's where my start. I use the word luck a lot. So maybe it was planned luck, but you know, I was, you know, because we were a startup, we were really, really frugal and we had to watch every penny. We didn't take any investment capital in the early days. We tried to grow the business through cash flow. And so we were methodical. So we said, hey, instead of going to, you know, 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, we're going to, the old tortoise and the hare story, we're going to, you know, slow and steady is going to win the race. And we think that our business can be around and successful 30 years from now. We think that we can predictably grow at 20% a year, which is formidable, especially law of big numbers. It gets harder and harder every year, but we've done that organically and we've done that methodically. And grew through cash flow. And so we were so good about always watching our P&L, always looking at cash flow, making sure we were responsible financially, making sure that we always had cash in the bank. We always had at least 12 months of runway. So that was in our DNA when 2008 hit. At the same time, you know, we're in an industry, dentistry, where even in 2008, it was still growing a little bit above inflation. And so while, you know, if I was in the mortgage business, I'd have a very different answer for you. If I was in the construction business, I'd have a very different answer for you. But, you know, while our customers felt maybe pain in their personal life, because maybe they had purchased a bigger home or they'd taken on a bigger mortgage, or maybe they made some investments, which we all know dentists love to do outside of dentistry, which we can talk about it later in the podcast. I think they should be investing in themselves, but because they already run the best business in the world. So, but, you know, I digress. Just maintaining good liquidity and good and making sure we had enough cash to pay our bills. And it wasn't that in business. If you actually think, it's really not that hard. Just make sure you have good liquidity so that when bad things happen, you can navigate through it. So this current pandemic was, you know, was very different. Except those same principles were still baked into our DNA as a company. Is I went right to liquidity, because If we couldn't pay the bills, we would have to let people go. And if we couldn't pay the bills, I mean, that, you know, that was the biggest issue was if our customers are going to shut down, we had to assume they weren't going to pay us. They did for the most part, by the way, but we had to assume they weren't going to pay us. And we had to assume that we were going to have to grant extensions on memberships. And we were going to have to extend terms on payment. And, you know, back in 2008, we had a few hundred customers. Right now, we got 15,000 dental practices. We have hundreds of millions of dollars in bookings that come through the companies. It's a very different type of business. And so that was really the first thing. And the second thing, you already mentioned the word is transparency. So we did have to, we furloughed people and we had to let go of 11 people, which I've never let go of anyone in my business career for reasons of the business not performing or needing liquidity. So, you know, 11 doesn't seem like a lot in the context of, you know, a few hundred employees or maybe some other companies of your listeners, but that's 11 families. You know, maybe they have 2 or 3 kids. You know, maybe they're supporting a parent. So whether it's 1, 11, or 100, it doesn't make a difference to me. You're impacting somebody's life. And so that really sucked. And so that was really hard. but we were transparent. And I think that was just those two things, making sure you're responsible with your cash flow, making sure you're transparent.
Absolutely.
And I don't know of any other, you know, you can't just create culture out of thin air where everyone's going to be loyal.
Yep.
You know, that's created over a number of years. So when bad things happen, that's when a really good culture paid off. But we already did that work.
Right.
We were part of it.
Absolutely.
That was years in the making. You don't just do that because a pandemic hits. Your culture's out of there. It's not. So all you can do is react. So be honest with the team and bank cash.
Absolutely.
Right? Make sure you've got a ton of liquidity in the bank. That's the only way to deal with something where I couldn't tell you what's going to happen tomorrow. And even today, but in January, it's been almost 9 months. I can't even tell you what's going to happen tomorrow.
I know.
So
crazy.
Still the same principles. Be transparent, stack cash, be very responsible with your money.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting because we as an organization, when the pandemic first hit, one of the very first pieces of content I think that we released was this whole concept of a break-even analysis and really understanding what your cash flow is. And this has never happened before, ever. So there were so many dentists that were used to this positive cash flow, and all of a sudden the spigot got turned off, and it was a very justifiable reason for a bit of panic on their part because they weren't prepared with the cash flows, with the liquidity, with the preparedness that you and you know the other members of the board had navigated Spear through even in 2008, because for them, as you said, even if they were making less money, they were still making money. And so it's a very, very, very scary prospect. And so, you know, if you were sitting there talking to a dentist, whether it's a general dentist or a specialist, and let's extend it, let's talk to any independent business owner, like what advice would you give them relative to just not only how to be a good leader, which I guess is a pretty broad question, but you know, some of the biggest lessons you've learned as a leader, that it's like, you know what, if you're going to do these, you know, 2-3 things, make sure you do this. Like, what would you tell them?
Yeah. So I'll speak in the context of a small business owner, right? That's our customer. And, you know, I guess we're a corporation where we have a bunch of shareholders and things like that. So we have unlike a small business owner, where at times the bank account of a small business owner gets, you know, commingled with the personal bank account, not literally, but figuratively, right? As you make money in your business, it's great. I got good cash flow and make my mortgage payment, buy a boat, all those sorts of things that happen with a small business owner. So I'd say, you know, my primary advice for a small business owner is they've got to, you know, you know, this whole Susie Orman thing, you know, you read it and you're like, I actually buy into that stuff. My mom was so good with her money that very early in life, I got, you know, this really great but simple advice is, you know, spend less than you earn.
Yep.
And so I think from a small business ownership perspective is I would just follow those same money management principles. So for one of our dentists, our clients, they average about $1.5 million in revenue. The business makes about $400,000. And so think about what your expenses are in those business, and the fixed expenses really at the end of the day, if there's no patients coming through the door, it's rent and your staff. You never want to let go of your staff, especially going back to that culture thing. If you've developed a great practice, human beings are not commodities, especially in the dental practice. These are folks that you've developed over a number of years. You want to keep them. We want to keep paying them. So I would first just look at whether it's 6 months, 9 months, I guess now I would just say 12 months, you know, make sure there's enough cash there. Enough money that you put aside so that if bad things happen, you can navigate that. Now, you know, dentists typically have loan payments and there's debt. And again, those are all things that are perfectly reasonable to have within, you know, within reason in the business. Just understand what your cash flow needs are and make sure you have enough cash stashed away to be able to go deal with those instead of buying a bigger house or going on fancier vacations and buying. I know it's like, I wish I had sort of more magical advice, but you know, it's like I said, business isn't that complicated, especially for a small business owner. I would just start there because if something like COVID hit, even though it's like this like black swan event where you think it would never happen, yes, our clients qualified for the government assistance, which was a couple months of payroll, and that would have been helpful, but it wasn't helpful enough. It was just a couple of months.
Yeah.
So they needed more to be able to kind of survive and thrive. So that's number one. Number two, which again, I think develops over a number of years is really develop your team and your team members. That the importance of a strong culture, not culture, like don't like you can Google culture and see what it means. That does nothing. It's culture is loyalty. Culture is trust. culture is transparency. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that you can unpack that are kind of universal principles where people want to feel very safe and comfortable and part of a family and a business like a dental practice, or you mentioned a bakery or some of these small businesses where you only got 10 people working there. So, and that's developed over a number of years so that, you know, let's say if something like this happens again, you've got so much trust inside your business and there's so much trust amongst your team that you can pretty much get through everything and everyone has an ownership mentality. And I think that was, you know, I always hoped we had that at Sphere. We had 90 people take pay deferrals, right? We've still have people that are owed bonus money from the first quarter and they're all still around, not because they want the money. They're around because they're a part of the solution. They said, hey, here's what we can do. We'll create deferrals for ourselves. We'll make sure that we can keep cash in the bank to make sure that, you know, we're able to do well as a business. Now, of course, we're going to, you know, all of that's going to be paid back here in the next couple of months because now we're out of this thing. But, you know, that's a lot of people that has, you know, volunteered and said, I'm willing to go make a sacrifice. Well, imagine if a dentist could have that same type of loyalty.
Absolutely.
And then transparency, you know, instead of trying to have this sort of, you know, I'm a very glass half full kind of person. And it was very humbling for me to say, you know, hey, we got to pump the big brakes on growth. Mm-hmm. We've got to pump the brakes on our investments. Yep. We are freezing hiring. We're deferring bonuses because I didn't know it was going to happen. You know, mid-March when it all kind of, you know, we just said, all right, I don't know what's happening. I'm not the Wizard of Oz. I don't have a crystal ball. All I know is that we could be in a lot of trouble if we don't do something fast. I need your help.
Yeah.
And the whole team kind of got together and they were very helpful. So I'd say those are my kind of primary advice. And what it's really saying is you sort of define leadership is be financially really responsible in your business. Develop a team that's built to last. So a team that with a really strong culture and as a good leader, just be honest.
Absolutely.
Right? You want to, I'm a positive guy. So I know Sphere was going to come out of this and, you know, in the right place because we have a great business with a great team and a great product. But it doesn't matter how good your business is. You don't have cash in the bank.
Yeah, it's true. I mean,
business is gone. So we had to kind of focus on it. That's just was the reality of our situation.
Absolutely. And being somebody who's part of the company as well, I mean, I remember that day when we were talking about what we need to do for deferrals and stuff. And I hadn't thought of it within the context of loyalty and culture before, but there was this deep level. It was like, what else can I do? Like, what else can I do to help the business, to help our clients, et cetera? Because, you know, what we do for dentists and their teams and their patients is really quite humbling. Because I often explain to people, if you just consider the fact that every dentist has on average, what, 12 to 1500 patients a record, you multiply that by 15,000, that's a very humbling thing to realize the impact on humanity that Sphere Education has. And every single person that works with us has that impact either directly or indirectly. So it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing
thing. And we hire really well, which means every one of our team members could get a full paycheck anywhere else they wanted to. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud of the fact that we've got a great team, but it means that for those, you know, we all read the news, you know, companies like Zoom and a lot of these tech companies, you know, the pandemic was a net positive for companies like Zoom and Amazon and Facebook and all these different technology businesses, including a bunch of the technology businesses in dental. Mm-hmm. And so, which is great. I mean, that, you know, but if we didn't have a good culture, our team members would have just gone and worked there because they can, because they're that good.
Yeah.
So we hire so well that our employees are infinitely poachable. And so if we don't have a great place to work where we're making a big impact and people actually want to come to work every day for not just the paycheck, but, you know, that combination of head and heart, where they feel like they're making an impact and they know their leadership team and they know their shareholder base is going to be loyal to them, they can leave.
Absolutely. Right?
And that's, I don't for a minute think that we don't have a group of team members that are incredibly highly employable and in great demand in many other great companies.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. You know, we talked about lessons of leadership and what you would say to a small business owner. And not only have you been obviously so involved in this business as we've been talking about, but part of the Young Presidents organization, having access to other businesses and so forth. What have you seen as some of the missteps that people commonly make within their businesses?
Oh my gosh, the list is pretty long. So I'd say, like, you know, where I So I'd say for starters, I think that while we read about cult personality CEOs and leaders that really drive their business, I do think that's mistake number one. There's a great book, I think it's called Bad Blood. It's the Theranos story around Elizabeth Holmes. Just an amazing book. It was a gentleman that writes for the Wall Street Journal that cracked that case. And one of the really funny things, it's serious, but I found it funny, is the employee base knew where the CEO was in the Steve Jobs biography based on how she behaved. Steve Jobs is one of those cult personalities that where it worked. But just, CEOs trying to emulate this kind of cult personality, leadership, where I actually think that works, like low single digit percentage of the time versus more kind of the Jim Collins mentality, which is this level five leadership from good to great. And so I more adopted in my leadership style, and a lot of the mentors I have, is that it's about the team, and it's about winning together. It's about giving credit where credit's due. It's not about this kind of cult personality where, again, in Tesla's case, it clearly works. In Apple's case, it clearly works, but those are really far and few in between. So I'd say that's mistake number one, is not really I'll use the term level five leadership because that's where sort of my school of thought comes from with Jim Collins' Good to Great. So I think not enough leaders adopt that philosophy and think this, going to be the sort of cult personality. The other one, I think, big mistake is thinking you're the smartest person in the room. And so I think it's very tempting to want to have the pen and go to a whiteboard. Whereas when I see a lot of mistakes where it's like, I want to lead the conversation. I want to make sure I've got the pen. I want to make sure that I'm the one driving the ideas, where, I think in both my experience and where I've seen, some good leadership through some of the other CEOs I get a chance to spend some time with, is they're able to get that out of their team members. And so truly having a really collaborative environment versus this kind of single, person that wants to have every idea in the room and everybody fall in line behind them, I think is where another big, mistake is with a lot of these businesses. And then finally, just the financial side of the business. Like I think it's so important to have the data dialed in. I think too many entrepreneurs they don't know when to make that transition from gut to using data to inform my gut.
Sure.
And those are two very, very different things. So I think that's when I think of financial responsibility, when I think of utilizing data to make decisions, that all to me sits in kind of that same bucket. Use data. Cause at some point, an entrepreneur has to use their gut.
Yeah.
They don't have we've got a ton of analysts at Spear that, can help me think through what the data means, but that wasn't always the case. But there's a point where you want to make that transition.
Absolutely.
And raw horsepower and running through brick walls isn't the answer.
No. So let's kind of turn it then to dentistry and dentists.
Yeah.
And so what do you think, and you kind of alluded to this earlier, because we've talked about this over the years too, about dentists owning other businesses and so forth, but what do you think is some of the common missteps that clinicians make, whether they be general dentists, specialists? What do you see as some common missteps that they make that they could avoid?
Yeah, so just learning from this most recent challenge of COVID, and I'm gonna guess this is the fifth time I've said it, but just not having enough cash in their bank.
Yeah.
So I'd say let's for starters, let's just make sure that you're putting enough away.
Yep.
Second, you already mentioned it, investing in other things. Like I don't know of a business where you could do $1 million and net $400,000 in cash, providing over the top good patient care, not by cutting corners. I'm talking being rewarded by delivering the best patient care. You get to pick your hours, you get to pick your team, you get to do dentistry the way you want to do it. You get to own your business. No one's your boss. So why would you invest in don't buy your building, buy another dental practice.
Right.
Enter another doctor. And you know, this thing called DSOs in our industry, and what they are for the listeners that don't know dentistry, is they're corporate practices, where some group or some individual will own 30, 40, 50 locations and the dentist will be the employee. I think many of them are good. So it's not, not to say a bad thing, but it mystifies me as to why dentists don't own those.
True.
Like why did some guy like me have to come in there and say, oh, I see this big opportunity where I can actually create this sort of multi-site, multi-location dental business where, you know, right under the dentist's nose, they may think that their business is boring, but it's got great margins. Mm-hmm. It provides a great lifestyle for them and their team, provides a great experience for their patients if they want to.
Sure.
And they can invest in themselves and maybe over time have two locations and three Absolutely. Locations and four locations, mentor someone from their local dental school, give them a path to ownership. And so mm-hmm. it's that whole thing, like you don't know what you don't know. And so yes, dentists aren't business people. Fine. Mm-hmm. But that's no excuse for not wanting to lean into running a business.
Yeah.
Like absolutely. when I started working at Sphere, you know, I didn't think I'd be spending like 30% of my time in human capital and HR, but mm-hmm. I am, right? And that's part of evolving into being a business person is you can't, you know, you have to do some things that you weren't expecting you were going to do. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that, you know, another 40% of my job would be working on the financial side of the business and working with shareholders. And I just thought I was going to be in like innovation mode the entire time, spinning mm-hmm. up new products. And I think, you know, if for a dentist to just, you know, find enjoyment in that whole journey and all those things, including the challenges of running a business and leaning into it and saying, I'm going to know this. I'm going to hire an attorney or an accountant, or I'm going to work with the best. I mean, Sphere, one of them, to help mm-hmm. me build my business. And I'm going to focus on that. And I'm going to build a great dental practice. I'm maybe, like I said, I think build two or three.
Yeah.
I would love to see the next kind of wave of growth in the dental business be from provider-owned, dental-owned dental practices mm-hmm. where they are owning four or five. They don't have to own 50. You don't have to do that, but like right. own four or five.
Absolutely.
Like that should be where the next wave comes from.
Absolutely. It's so fascinating to me because, you know, being able to be in the front row of watching all of these colleagues of mine, and to your point about investing in themselves. And it's just, and it doesn't have to be, you know, as Dr. Sphere says, it doesn't have to be Sphere, it could be anywhere, but just invest in yourself, continue to learn about the business of dentistry, the clinical side of dentistry. And that's where that joy comes from, so that you can do exactly what you said and have this wonderful life. And so I know that you love data and trends and the numbers and the profession and so forth. And so I love hearing you talk to where you think things are headed. So COVID aside, because as you said, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but COVID aside, where do you see dentistry in the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, so from a macro perspective, it's going to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, aging population, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that a lot of the new procedures that we have around clear aligners and implant mm-hmm. therapy and endodontics, they're all the things that are happening from an innovation perspective are following those macro trends. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it is a unbelievable profession to stay committed to long-term because there's an unbelievable amount of growth there. Mm-hmm. In any part of the business, whether sure. you're in what Sphere does or, you know, owning a dental practice. Mm-hmm. Where I think the biggest, so there's going to be, I'll talk about business innovation and then mm-hmm. clinical innovation.
Sure.
So on the clinical side, orthodontics is going to be huge. Mm-hmm. And so things like, it already is huge. It sure. already was such a prolific part of the business. But what things like Smile Club Direct and Bite and some of the things Invisalign and Clear Correct and all these mm-hmm. folks are doing on the dental side are doing is they're raising awareness around the category of dentistry for a consumer that may not want to go to the dentist. And so believe it or not, I don't mention I love numbers and now I can't remember the most important one off the top of my head, but I think it's only 40% of adults are seeing a dentist mm-hmm. In a 12-month period. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a massive amount of growth just built into the population that isn't comfortable seeing a dentist.
Yep.
And so I think that's going to, you know, really kind of increase awareness for dentistry. It's going to bring patients either in the door of a dentist or in some mm-hmm. of these are really just direct to consumer businesses, but it's going to bring them closer to the benefits of good dentistry. Mm-hmm. And then that's going to create opportunities for the doctors to deliver more comprehensive care. Because mm-hmm. as you know, as a dentist, it's not just, you know, for the patients that are listening out there, just throwing in clear aligners doesn't mean that your teeth are going to get
exactly.
whiter and straighter automatically. Exactly. There's a lot that goes along with that.
Exactly.
You know, dentists are called doctors for reasons. They're yeah. not tooth technicians. They are really yeah. doctors.
Yeah. Every time I pass those kiosks in the malls, yeah. I have to, like, literally bite my tongue. It's like, keep walking. Anyway.
Yeah. I respect the dentist in you. I would hope you would say that because I think clinically yeah. there's some improvements that can be made there, but I'm really excited about those companies because they're raising awareness for yeah. everybody and for the patients that do see good clinical outcomes, mm-hmm. good on them. Because you know what? Maybe they couldn't afford to, or they're too afraid to go to to a provider's office themselves.
Totally.
So that's on the clinical side. And I think the same thing for endodontics and implants. I think the elephant in the room clinically that I think is going to be hard to predict is you have specialists typically that do orthodontics, endodontics, and implants. But right now you have a lot more generalists doing it. Mm-hmm. Part is because they are being trained to and they're getting more confident. The other part of it is there's more technology that allows them to be more proficient in doing things that typically a specialist would do.
Yep.
So I don't know what's going to happen there. But for the, you know, father of a two-year-old, when my two-year-old is ready to maybe go to braces or maybe they're going to get an implant, it's one of my own, I would probably go to a specialist. So that's my position, but I think that remains to kind of be seen on the clinical side of where the growth is. Clinical, but also technology. So I'll go middle of the Venn diagram. Digital scanning. So, you know, for the patients out there, the goop that you used to have in your mouth is turning into a digital image to the point where I think it's going to be an iPhone or an Android phone in less, like in single digit years, not like 10 or 20 years. So going from these, you know, very complex devices could just be a standard camera and software. And so I think that's going to be a really big one where you're, and already things like dental monitoring, phenomenal new company. Where you can sort of check how your clear aligners are doing at home versus going into the dentist. Phenomenal, right?
Absolutely.
So CEO of that company, who you should have on this show, is just phenomenally talented and such a visionary around that type of technology. And then for the pure software side, so 95% of dental practices today operate with on-prem software, not even cloud-based software. And so I think the software side of running a dental practice, kind of like what Salesforce did for other businesses, is waiting to happen in dentistry. And I don't know who's going to take that crown, but there's a lot of companies trying. Either way, for our business, Martin, we're educators.
Yep.
So whichever technology wins, we're going to teach doctors how to use.
Sounds good to
me. So I feel really good no matter what, because, you know, our job is to make sure that we help doctors implement this new either clinical or business technologies, do it well, teach them how to use it, and ensure at the end of the day, they're able to provide exceptional clinical outcomes for their patients.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I got kind of one final question, I guess, as we kind of wrap up our time together. And you mentioned earlier that you're a very positive guy, and I've certainly seen that in you over the years. And I want to publicly thank you. I've told you this before, but it's been a number of years. You are one of two people responsible for the man that I am today relative to coaching and positive psychology, because you showed Sean Acor's TED Talk video in a town hall meeting. I literally bought the book as the video was happening, and that led to everything else. And so I would like to publicly thank you for that.
Oh, thanks, man. That's so cool. I'm so glad to hear that.
I mean, literally, there was you, my friend Chris, and my friend Seth, or sorry, my friend Justin and Seth that really started this, but you were the first, and it started this snowball. And it's just, I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for not only your leadership, but that one particular day that completely changed my life. And so, you know, we're going to be publishing this in the next couple of weeks. And so, you know, we're still in the middle of this. We're not out of the woods yet. And so what would you say to anybody listening relative to how you're thinking about the near and the extended future as we kind of dig ourselves out of this pandemic?
Yeah. You know, it's, I'd say spend more time with the people you care about would be my, you know, my primary advice is, you know, I, like probably many people, got caught up in this cycle of success. And I think what COVID taught me is I can actually have it both ways. I think I can run a great business and be even more successful in business, but not compromising the things that matter most, which is my wife and my son and my extended family. And so, the amount of time I was able to spend with Liz and Liam, although she probably wanted to kill me some days because I hadn't been home this much in so long, is valuable. And it was a really good reminder because, you know, the Earth's been around for a billion years.
Yep.
We've been, you know, we've recorded history as this short, but real history, if you read the book Sapiens, probably my favorite book on the planet, you realize that, like, you know, what's our purpose on Earth? Like, truly, it's nothing, right? Like, we're such a small, like, maybe, you know, funny quote he has in the book or in a podcast is like, you know, maybe a million years from now, they know like who we are, like, were we the Americans? Like, where were we in history? And so it's such a short time on earth that I think the advice I have for people is just, you know, that sort of carpe diem, seize the day. Mm-hmm. And I would more focus it on the personal life than the professional life, because I think the professional life comes naturally because we live in places mm-hmm. where we need a job, but spend, you know, just spend as much time as humanly possible with the people you love. And I think from there, everything else will work out.
Everything else will fix itself.
And well, be nice to your neighbor, right? We're exiting an election cycle where there's a lot of divisiveness. And I have friends on, you know, far left, far right, and everything in between.
Yep.
And I found that I've stayed smiling the whole way through because I haven't engaged in debate because it's a waste. But I have engaged in just be nice to everybody.
Absolutely.
You know, that's all that matters. It's really not that complicated. Like, you know, I respect other people's views. I try to stick with the formula that says, you know, if I'm going to go debate someone, I need to be able to debate against my own view. Mm-hmm. Or I don't deserve to debate that person. So you know, I don't debate that often because I don't have the time to go research someone else's, you know, some opposing view. So I'd say just be nice to people, spend time with people you love. And I think everything's going to be just okay. So I know it's not complicated advice, but I just think that's the way through challenges like this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Kaleem, it's been an absolute pleasure. I really want to thank you for joining me this afternoon. And we're going to post information on Spear Education and some information on Kaleem below. And for everybody listening, please don't forget to subscribe and click the notification button. And lastly, always, always remember, please, life speaks to you. And if you think it doesn't, you're not listening. Take care, everybody. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Martin.